Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm chatting with Mark Chandler. He is a managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex. Now, Mark, as I've outlined before, we chat pretty much on a weekly basis. You are really a currency analyst. You're a currency expert, and there are certain things that we can see within currency moves that also give us a barometer of what's going on in the markets. One thing that I want to start off with here is what we're seeing in currencies that also relates to markets is this focus on growth, growth stocks when it comes to the markets and growth currencies when it comes to the currency market. Can you break down some of your analysis on what the strongest currencies are, what some of the weakest currencies are, and what this all means that growth currencies are also rising?
Yeah, sure. So sometimes I sort of think that the dollar, the most actively traded currency, is a driver. Like back in November and December, the dollar fell. It was really the key force. But I think that sometimes the dollar also plays like this fulcrum, like in the middle of a seesaw, if you will. And on one side of that seesaw now are those currencies that people would want to play, be long, if they were optimistic about growth going forward. And those would be these currencies would be the Australian dollar, the New Zealand dollar. Often the Canadian dollar is in that, call it the dollar block. And same thing with the Scandi currencies like Norway and Sweden. Now, there's some exceptions and minor tweaks to it, but those are basically the currencies that are up year to date. Sterling is the strongest currency of the majors, up 2.5%. The Aussie is sort of wrestling with it for that first place. It's up about 2%, 2.2%. On the bottom, the currencies that are down against the dollar this year are those currencies, like the U.S. dollar, that investors, especially leverage investors, hedge funds, CTAs, would use, we call them funding currencies. They'd borrow them and use those proceeds to buy a growth currency, or buy a higher-yielding asset. And those would be the Swiss franc and the Japanese yen. So year-to-date, the Japanese yen is the weakest of the major currencies. It's down almost as much as the Australian dollar is up. That is, the yen is down about 2.2% against the U.S. dollar, and the Swiss franc, next to weakest, down 1.25%, almost 1.3% against the dollar. And so it's not so much that it's really against the dollar. I think that the real play is the dollar is really stuck in the middle, and that people are trying to buy those currencies that they think are levered to growth. And Aussie has it interesting, tied to commodities, tied to the rising recovery in Asia. The currency that perhaps sticks out for many would be the sterling. And sterling, I was saying this before we got on the air, was that sterling, since the end of October, there's been about 15 weeks or so, maybe 16, and sterling has only fallen in two of those weeks. It's almost been like a revaluation of sterling. Some suggest that there's a structural adjustment here, now that the UK is not part of the EU. But I wonder if it can't just be explained by the same thing that, right, they were seeing in these other markets, this push for growth. They've been quick about rolling out the vaccine, relatively among the best, the major countries. The central bank has sort of gone out of its way to play down the likelihood of negative interest rates. And so I think that this has been a sort of a trend move in sterling, but I'm hesitant to talk about structural factors. Like, is it really going to be a growth currency going forward? I just think it's right now being treated as such. And that's probably the important takeaway.
Mark, have you seen times like this, or let's relate back to times like this where we have seen these growth currencies start to rise and use that as a barometer for what we can expect in terms of markets, but also economic data? Is there anything in history that you can point us back to when we have seen this environment?
Well, what I find interesting is most of us would think that rising commodity prices should lift, say, the commodity currency, say, like the Aussie. But what often happens, and some academic work can bear this out, is that sometimes the currency leads. So the strength of the Aussie would be good for Australian miners, for example. And so I'm hesitant to draw like hard and fast relationships, but it does seem like there might be something there, as well as what we're seeing in the surveys, like sentiment and confidence surveys, is people are very confident about the second half of this year. And looking for, in the U.S., one of our leading experts is talking about things back to normal by Christmas. And I know it's only, you know, it's late February here, but it's like it's moving rapidly in the sense that a slow rollout of the vaccines, but that's going to be expedited, even though, of course, you know, we've had this horrible winter weather in the U.S. that's really delaying things a little bit, postponing things. But I think in general, the sentiment of easy monetary policy for as far as the eye can see, even if it's only till the end of this year or into next year, and fiscal stimulus. And again, we're not yet there with the U.S., but we're close to it, where next week, Chairman Powell's testifying before Congress in his biannual presentations, the House of Representatives is going to be passing the stimulus bill. And it doesn't mean it's done, but we're going to have it passed by the middle of March when the current unemployment benefits expire. And so this is another big package. We're talking about between the end of last year's package and this package, we're talking about something on the magnitude of 12% of GDP. Plus, as soon as this is out of the way, the next big, like the next big giant issue is going to be this infrastructure effort. It's going to be another huge bill, and the infrastructure is another part of the commodity story. And so I think that this story that we're seeing throughout the market is probably going to be here for a while longer, even if we get some violent setbacks like we saw in the U.S. stock market this week.
Okay, so you see this trend as still sustainable then. But on the flip side of that, do you see any of these currencies or even any market sectors as being a little overvalued, or I guess that's a tough term to use, but a bit overheated in terms of comparing to some of the other currencies and markets that have run so much?
Yeah, I think that, like, that's the challenge. You know, it's like I saw this. There's a woman who runs a very large, successful fund in the U.S., and someone had asked her about overvaluation of the stock market. And she said, there's not an equity market bubble, there's a fixed income market bubble. It's like, don't look at me, look at you. And I think that's a concern that many people have, is that what level of interest rates makes it so that it's not so cheap money anymore? You know, as we sit here today, the U.S. 10-year is trading near 135, 1.35%. That's up 26 basis points in the past month. And it's not the most. The U.K. is up 40. France is up 24. New Zealand is up almost 50 basis points just in the past month. And so it's really, so I think many people have that in mind, is at what level of interest rates does it really take some of the froth away from some of those growth markets? At the same time, look at what's happening in some of the emerging markets. You know, give you an example, the currency that's fallen out of favor that would be part of this growth story or has been part of the growth story is the Mexican peso. It was really a darling of the markets in the last few months of 2020. And here's what's happened. They have a dollar bond, a 10-year dollar bond, and it pays more than the U.S. But that premium over the U.S. is narrowing. In this past month, while the U.S. yield is up over 25 basis points, Mexico is down to like 1 basis point. So call it flat. So Mexico rates are not backing up like the rest of the world. And so what we're seeing is that some of these currencies that were aided by wide interest differentials are losing a bit of their luster.
Mark, let's talk about the yield environment then, because look at even the 10-year. Again, today, screaming higher. We're at 1.36%. I realize that's still a low number, but considering where we were 6 months ago, even a year ago, this is broadly higher, especially on the long end. We keep on hearing that this has to have an impact because of all the money and debt that's in the system. But quite frankly, it hasn't slowed down the markets all that much. I guess we're having a bit of a reversal today in markets again, but still, higher interest rates seem broadly to be here, and the trend continues higher. When does it start to matter in your eyes? Or does it ever start to matter? Can we handle this as long as we just keep on printing?
Yeah, I don't see these rates. I mean, I think these rates are still very low historically. I mean, think that our tenure, like you say, it was just below 1.4%, and that 1.4% is roughly the rate of CPI. Where were we before the pandemic struck? We were close to 2%. If you tell me they're going to go back to 2%, will that derail the stock market? I'm not so convinced. Remember, back before the pandemic struck, people were already debating whether the stock market was overvalued. And, you know, this idea of a bull market and everything or buy everything, I was looking at this, trying to find when did this first arise as a, as like sort of a meme in the market. 2017, I believe, is the cover of a Time magazine. 2017. And so here we are, early 2021. Say, well, we've already seen a rise in U.S. yields from about, say, call it 0.5, 50 basis points last, like, say, last summer. And we're at 135 or so today, on our way to at least 150. Can we go to 2%? I think so. I'm not sure that that's a major hurdle, especially, this is, I think, the important takeaway, is that the rise in U.S. rates can be of one of two components. It can be that the real rate is rising, demand for capital is increasing, or it could be the premium. And when it comes to the U.S. Treasury market, we think of only one basic premium, that's inflation. And sure enough, the inflation expectations explains the rise in yields. The Federal Reserve has told us that they want to boost inflation expectations, and they're succeeding. And so this is, I'm not sure that this is a bad thing that's happening. But you're right that it might take the markets. We might have to have like the, remember that old taper tantrum? Well, now we're getting a little bit of a tantrum without the tapering.
That is true. We are. But the one interesting thing here is as rates continue to rise and as currencies, fine, the move into the growth currencies, how does this then relate to commodities? Because today's another interesting day where we have the precious metals. They're up a little bit. Gold's up marginally. It has pulled back a little bit today. Silver's doing better than gold, but it's the base metals. You look at copper. Copper's up 11 cents. Copper's over $4 a pound right now. That's almost a 3% move today. Nickel is also higher. How do you see these inflation expectations, but then also balanced out with these higher yields impacting commodities? Which commodities are you most interested in?
Yeah, so I think different types of commodities. I'd say that a lot of those industrial metals you mentioned, to me, it's not really an issue about the Federal Reserve or really the U.S. so much. It's about booming China and brought more broadly Asia. I think that, of course, we've had this horrible energy disruption in the U.S., natural gas, oil refining capacity. This is all going to be a – this is all a supply issue, really. And I think the same thing is for many of the grains, different harvests, strong Chinese demand. China's ending up to be a huge buyer of U.S. agricultural produce. And I think the USDA just revised up its estimates. So I'd rather take a look at the different commodities and figure out what's the driver as far as what's Asia driving, what is weather related, what's energy related. But I'm not at the point where, of course, no one's doubting that prices are rising. It's really a question of whether they're sustainable and whether it's going to be persistent increases. And I'm kind of on the side of the Fed. We'll hear from Powell next week that him and as well as Yellen take this argument that if the unemployment rate was calculated in a more accurate fashion, unemployment would be closer to 10% in the U.S. You know, our weekly initial jobless claims are at four-week highs. We have more people collecting filings for unemployment benefits the first time. More people now, actually for the last 40 weeks or so, more people now than at the peak of the 2008-2009 financial crisis. And so I think this is what the Fed's wrestling with. Do you worry about inflation that's not yet in the numbers even? And even when it was at the end of before the pandemic, it really did get to their targets. Or do you worry about the scarring and the high levels of unemployment?
Where does this all leave us then, Mark? It sounds like there's still a lot of unknowns. I get there's always unknowns, but where do you think that leaves investors? What can they focus on here?
Yeah, I think that it's scary. I mean, I think for investors, because the number one rule is capital preservation. And I think that the low yields and the elevated valuations in the stock market makes it like more fraught with risk, I would say. But at the same time, I think what that means is that what I've done, I think other people are doing as well, and that's finding opportunities to take profits and boost cash levels So when there is a reasonable pullback, 3%, 5%, 10%, whatever that is, that you're prepared emotionally and materially to take advantage of that pullback.
All right. Well, Mark, we're going to wrap it up there. Some interesting comments, and always interesting to look at the currency markets with you. I will post a link to your blog, that's Mark2Market, where you can keep up to date with all of the notes that you publish every day, focused on different market moves and different data points. It's great having you on the show again, Mark. We'll chat again next Friday. Have a great weekend.
Thanks. Good luck to everybody.